There's a great and a bloody fight round this whole world tonight. In the battle, the bombs and shrapnel rain. Hitler told the world around he would tear our Union down. But our Union's gonna break them slavery chains. And our Union's gonna break them slavery chains. I walked up on
Hello, and welcome back to our podcast from Fanfic with Fanfic. It itself is a synthesis of Fallout, a pop game of a post-apocalyptic wasteland, and My Little Pony, a popular show about pastel races. Hi, I'm Fi. I'm joined once again with my lovely co-host, Weird. Say hello, Weird.
Well, I won't remain so lovely if you keep addressing me with this staggering informality. Dear audience, please rest assured that you are not presented with any inferior model of talking jukebox. But one who is gifted with title and majesty, Sir Weirdington Esquire, at your marginal service. It really is preferable that you say that.
Yes. Hi again, folks. We're back again. We made it past another, like, hellish chapter of nightmares that made me want to die and quit the podcast forever. In that order.
To such a, like... Dear listener, the last two episodes of the podcast have been hell to recap because the second that I'm done recording them, I utterly forget. My mind immediately, almost in the way that the veil falls over it, and I am protected from my own memory.
We can help each other on this one because I remember this one pretty clearly.
Just before we pressed the record button, just before we began recording, it occurred to me that I would have to recount this and that I would have to remember it. And the faintest hint of a memory of last week's episode's events was like a gut punch.
But we begin with the Legate showing back up again and ruining everything, as he often does.
Like, were there... what I recall is... literally nothing. Like it was an entire episode that took place in a single room with Blackjack attempting at war with Somber, at war with the author himself, trying to exert animus, any act, yes, of will at will. All.
Yeah.
And at every turn, like a sort of a passive-aggressive playground bully.
A banana peel would just slip underneath her every single time.
And it's... I don't know what psychologically drove Somber to do this. Like, I almost suspect
there might be
some sort of meta battle between him and his editors.
I can guess. No, I think it's much simpler than that. I think that we haven't had another scene where, like, any significantly sad things have happened to the main character in a long time. So there needed to be a big, like, oh, she should lose a whole bunch. Yeah, there's a concept in, like, storytelling that is, like, when used really well, like, I can only think of it in video games, but, like, because it's just the way I am, but, like, there's the concept of disempowerment. And the idea of disempowerment, especially in video games, is it can be a very dramatic, intense scene when you're suddenly stripped of all your weapons and gear, and you're kind of confronted with an antagonist that you're not prepared to deal with, and there's this kind of, like, tension of, like, what's going to happen next, because, you know, you're so used to your rocket launcher and Gatling gun and knives and swords and bombs and special abilities that, like, there's this significant, like, gut punch, like, one of the most famous examples ever is the game Bioshock, where you're completely stripped of all agency within the moment, and there's this terrifying, intense scene where you really do not know what's going to happen next because of it. You're completely thrown for a loop, and it's exciting. There is definitely an attempt to recreate that kind of feeling here, but it sort of doesn't work because of, like, a bunch of factors. But, like, first of most is that, like, Cognitum is a bad villain. The Legate is a bad villain. Steel Rain's a bad villain. Dawn's a bad villain. And Blackjack is a bad protagonist. We don't care about any of these people. So the only real gut punches that I really experienced with this chapter really just came from Rampage, because, like, despite everything between Rampage and Blackjack, I still kind of like these people despite themselves. Like, it not because of, like, anything that Somber has ever wrote about them, but almost like this bizarre meta-contextual reading you can take of them, where they're horrible, problematic children that, like, somewhat try to do the right thing, but are, like, it's almost as if they're plagued by, like, an evil ghost that, like, that any time they try to do anything good, another hand comes out and reaches and plucks away whatever they're doing. It's almost Berserkian, if you, like, if you count Sovereign as the idea of evil or the god hand.
So, I think it can be basically summed up, like, the Legate makes out with the evil android who is the, what even is she in relation to the Soul Eater? Anything? Like,
what is Cognitum? Like, what is her? She's an artificial, like, to recap what she actually is she was an artificial secretary created by Horse, who was also used as a sex bot. And she had the memories of Luna, like the princess and the reigning, like, head of the Equestrian Empire at the time. All of her memories were dumped into her. She festered for 200 years, gaining more sentiency, and is convinced that she's, like, all of the worst parts of Luna as a person. Some sort of maniacal evil Shodan slash GLaDOS slash any evil AI from anything. Now she's in Blackjack's body because she needs to be, like, she has a god complex as a robot, as they oft do.
Yeah, okay. So the only actual event that happened in the entire chapter happened at the end, where Blackjack was shunted into a full meat recreation of herself. Well, bad Shodan. I'm trying to come up with, like, a sort of Wario-esque portmanteau of Showman, Shodan. Like, but anyway, not Shodan. Is downloaded into Blackjack's rad cancer zombie cyborg body. The Legate makes out with her in that state. Rampage's character is fully assassinated,
and she's sort of exempt from the scene. Like I was talking about this with a pal, and Rampage makes no other moves in the scene. It's almost as if she just, like, disappears. Like, she's just like, just an animation still of Rampage is just slowly slid out of the room. Because she doesn't talk. She doesn't do anything else in the rest of the scene, and it doesn't even, like, indicate that she left. She's just gone. And we have no idea why.
Which, again, if it was our conception of Rampage, it would be to lull the bad guys into a false insecurity while she, like, just, like, moves to the left and, like, does things in the blurry, like, back frame. But that's not the case. So, and I think that was just last week's chapter, and in between is just a lot of dumb master, like, it real, like,
we learned a ton of lore. We learned, like, why the villain is doing what they're doing and what they're actually trying to do, which is basically just a, like,
oh yeah, we learned what the Tenular Project Horizons is. Fire a chunk of the moon, which is made of soul dust, directly at Hoofington. So that
to kill the Eater of Souls, so that it can make a perfect city.
But in doing so, like, they intend to fire it wrong, so that the One Ring substance that has been made hideously, pointlessly complex into apparently bad nanites irradiate pure entropy, and yet are also. We've only ever seen them radiate pure entropy, but Sombre has now apparently gotten confused and gotten the entropy radiation mixed up with the nuclear bomb radiation, which produces mutations. And so now, instead of being pure entropy, it's pure the opposite of that.
Entropy? I don't know.
Pure energy output. Pure.
It's pure evolutionary mutant. Yeah, it's pure evolution. And, like, the only reason why I think that it exists that way is because that way Sombre gets his own special kind of magic that isn't just flux, which is just a thing from the original story, because he's just wiping... It's just another instance of wiping his ass with the main story. just refusing to engage with the like previously established metaphysics of the
goblinization. God, I
it's mine now.
By the end of the story, I do need to like find that quote from Tolkien. And they were in cave. They were made. It came with me making many clever things, but never anything beautiful. Only things that cut and bite and snap.
But yeah, that was basically the chapter. Is BJ got dump shocked into a she got into a new body, and then her body, her brain got separated from her body into a computer, and then that computer got blown up by Steel Rain, thus killing the protagonist again. You know, again, for like the fifth time at this point in the story.
Gosh, what happens?
Well, the thing I was just gonna briefly talk on before we get into the next chapter.
I didn't even have the strength last week to go, oh, good, like to do the standard protagonist is dead joke, like wash hands, like, well, I guess we're done.
even the joke has been done so many times, even our joke about it is starting to get played out. But the thing I just want to talk about the idea of disempowerment, and like the problem is with like disempowerment is that disempowerment is only particularly like engaging when it's done really sparingly, because otherwise, like, because like the big reason why disempowerment works as well as it does is either one of two ways. It's either like to really highlight the hopelessness of the situation, or to have a moment of significant triumph where, you know, all the chips are down, everyone's beaten, like how do they possibly get out of this, and then like a clever thing happens. And this story certainly fucking tried with that Discord thing, but because it's another instance of Calvin balling, where he just goes like, oh, Discord shows up and does a thing, but he never figured out what that thing would actually do. When it gets to what it does, it's so inscrutably insignificant that it doesn't matter. And coupled with that, because this is the way it is, like, this has been done so many times that the contrivances required to bring the protagonist back from the dead, ludicrously insane. And we'll get into them in this chapter. They're ludicrously insane. I'm just going to get into it now. Chapter 66. So we begin this chapter in the most... God, like, so if you have any reading comprehension issues, this chapter is a fucking nightmare. Because the entirety of the chapter is told from the perspective of Charm, the like bratty princess that BJ
anointed,
refused
back
to sacrifice.
In the society, or,
well, like, no, it was the one that left. It's the one that she didn't
oh,
choose, and
God.
She had a tantrum and left.
The worst.
It's from
her. The worst.
Well, okay, but it's not. So that's not the worst part about this. The worst part about this is that because the way it's been done, it's this ridiculous thing where it starts off as like it's a fairy tale, with all the actors being characters that are in this scene. So because of that, all of the characters are given these like epithets, like the princess or the knight or the vizier, and like or the false god or whatever. And like because of that, this scene is so fucking hard to understand what's happening. To give a really, really quick rundown of what's happening is... because it takes a little while for the characters to figure this out. BJ's memories have gotten dumped into Charm at the last second.
What was even the point of the meat body?
The meat body has her soul, which is distinct. This is something we just learned just now.
Does this new... Okay. All right. Okay. All right. Okay.
Sombra doesn't think how it makes any sense, so don't bother.
Does it even have... No, like, is it emotionally detached? Because it's disconnected from
the
soul?
So what it is that the memories don't have, like... they don't have, like, the core identity of Blackjack. It is just her memories. So that, like... So Charm just thinks they're her own memories, because it's not... She doesn't remember them as Blackjack. She remembers it as being herself experiencing these things. Which admittedly is interesting, but, like... This scene is so fucking convoluted as it is, adding a whole extra wrinkle that memories are distinct from soul magic is a whole extra thing we don't have time to even really, like, deal with.
But he isn't even a memory with that. Never mind. I'm not gonna... These questions are too big for this shit.
For this fucking setting. We do know that souls and memories are slightly different from all the way back in Fall Equestria, because, like, when you take a memory and put it into a memory orb, it doesn't, like... take their personality with it. But this is already breaking the continuity of how memory orbs work, because in memory orbs, they're so immersive that you are that person when you're experiencing the memory.
So I don't know how you have that without a sense of identity attached to it, like the I. The Maya of that person, their accumulated karma as attached to those experiences.
The metaphysics of the setting just doesn't work, because it's somber writing over everything with colored marker saying no. Exactly. But this just this scene is fucking impossible to get through because of this. We get so many dumb revelations that it's even stupider. So we get this really, really annoying scene where, like, the Legate and Steel Rain are basically just being like, oh yeah, we're going to kill Cog the moment she's no longer useful to us. We actually don't, like, have any faith in her and, like, don't care about
Jesus
her. And, like, it's
just...
Christ! It's just one of those things where it's like, I know that Cog isn't a very good villain, but, like, it's such... This is such a, like a moment where I wish that, like, I wish you just pulled a Megatron and be like, is that how you think it is? And just kill both of them, or just immediately cripple both of them in a way that they didn't know was possible. And it's like, yeah, don't ever talk to me about like that ever again. But like, it's another instance of just like, Somber, tearing down all your female characters like this is really, really, like, if we're a self-supposed ally and feminist. Yeah. For a self-supposed ally and a feminist, when you go, oh yeah, all my female characters, no one ever believes in anything they ever do. Even the villains, no one has any faith in anything they ever try.
Even when they're deifically powerful and have remote access
really
to heart
sexist
bombs inside them. Like,
you dumb shit. But because she's now in Blackjack's body, she can't, like, remotely perceive them, which is stupid.
What?
Like, why would that work that
what?
Way? It's, yeah.
What?
Yeah.
What? I don't know.
Yeah, like what?
Blackjack is fully Wi-Fi enabled. What? Super a lot. And why wouldn't you even? Why would you? Why? Why? What? And why wouldn't you produce a clone to put it into the? Like, why not just create a new instance?
Why would it?
Why
would
you create
a
virtual
work that way?
Machine
like
to?
So there's a lot of things that this brings up as an idea in this setting that is never touched on, is the idea that, like, so the only reason why, like, the only way it's assumed why it works with Blackjack is that, like, she's not so much in her body as she's in her cybernetics. Like, that's how I always interpret this, is that she's not, it's that her brain is enough cybernetics, fully digital consciousness could be just plugged into it. Or like a magical technological wonder can be like plugged into her cybernetics, and that's why she, like, that's why Blackjack had to go through all this bullshit, is because that way she was compatible with it. She's in her meat body, like, she is the organic parts as well, I guess, and like, why she doesn't, like, why she loses all of her techno magical abilities by that happening, it makes no sense. There's no explanation of why that is. Outside of just because that way they can have this conversation with where both of her star screams. Well, I guess her star scream and her sound wave equivalents.
But like,
Soundwave are both
was
talking about
obsessively loyal. So like, never mind. It's just as I was saying, and I noticed it was just way too nerdy. But anyway, yeah.
Yeah,
like,
I was gonna say like it's the worst.
Just
always imagine the worst conception is what I mean. It's the Soundwave. It's their Soundwave and Starscream going like, oh yeah, we're just gonna betray you and there's nothing you can do about it. Like they're basically just waiting for it
to
go up to
her face.
Note.
Still, like that's the thing that I couldn't.
Well, no, not to her face. They're just talking about it casually because they don't care. It's very not cool. It's very exhausting.
It's a little early in the episode for this, but podcast recommendation: Sayer, horror podcast, takes place on a space station. Terrifying villain AI. The later seasons do a lot with the, like, Sayer becomes Sayer's own antagonist, because at a certain point, like, it's necessary, it found itself necessary to clone itself, so different instances of Sayer it's very touch comas go wrong. Anyway, it's that all that to say that that's an example of a piece of media that isn't as stupid as Somber when it comes to an AI needs to do something in a body beyond itself. And of course it wouldn't abandon all of its power over an entire structure, a massive infrastructure that makes it makes it omnipotent to do
yeah.
it. Why would you? Why?
It doesn't make any sense. Oh, get ready for the next gut punch. Grit your teeth. They're casually talking about it, and Steel Reins, it's like, yeah, the whole prophecy thing's real. It was real convenient to whip everybody up into a frenzy and get Leggett on board, like get Kaidatum on board with this. And like, it's like, oh no, the prophecy's real. What, Somber? Why do this? He's like, oh no, the prophecy's real. There was always the Maiden of Stars is meant to oppose the Eater of Souls, and it doesn't really matter who fits the bill for that. And it's like, oh yeah, also I serve the Eater of Souls, and I'm basically like, well, okay. He worships the Eater of Souls for the stupidest reasons possible. Like, it's one of those things where, like, authors always really do a really bad job of explaining, like, why a, like, religious fanatic would be religious. He basically, like, went like, oh yeah, the Eater of Souls is the most perfect being in existence and is ultimately powerful, so why wouldn't you worship that thing if you knew it was real? And it's like, that's not a motivation. That's just, like, that's just a contrivance to say why this character would believe in that thing, because, like, we're never given any examples of the Eater of Souls being powerful, like, fucking at all. It's kind of been, like, a dormant nuclear reactor for the last, like, 200 years. You haven't given any examples for, like, what the justification is. And, like, the excuse of just saying, like, oh, well, the Legate's just crazy and fanatical is also, like, a cop-out. Like, it doesn't matter that, like, it doesn't make any sense why he just doesn't give really a justification for why he, like, worships it by just, instead of just being, like, a generic fanatical religious person, which is very cash money. It's very Lovecraft and the worst parts of Lovecraft. Because he also freaks out because he thinks Discord did something and he doesn't know, like, what it is. And he's, like, yelling at Steel Reins and, like, beating him up and shit over it. And he does a stupid thing that's dumb where he, like, does basically, like, a bullshit magic, dark magic spell where he, like, calls on, like, named elder gods of the Lovecraft mythos, which is very, I don't know, it's just...
Just straight up note, like... Just straight up Yog-Sothoth, like, he references, and
Dagon is specifically the one that's used, or Dagon.
Couldn't even fucking with horse puns, could you? Couldn't even. And also, he himself is a sorcerer instead of just a public official wearing a lot of, like, magic like,
things. Yeah, no, he is a dark. He is a dark evil shaman. He is like, he's literally like a Lovecraft character. He is like a ridiculous Lovecraft evil dark skinned cultist. Like, it's extreme. Like for all Equestria gets into a lot of trouble with the way that it handles zebras, but, like, boy, does Somber really triple down on it. But yeah, it's
a level of emotional pain I'm at right now. Moment ago, it was sort of WAD cover, World of Darkness.
Crying while shooting guns in the air.
Crying blood while I shoot two guns in the air in the rainy darkness. Now it's just 1,000 yards. Like, I'm staring into infinity, feeling nothing.
Yeah, he just does some dark magic shit, and it doesn't really matter. I don't care about the Legate, even though he's, like, the primary antagonist of this setting.
He's the primary antagonist now! Okay!
He always was. He always was. Cognitive never mattered.
Okay!
As I said this before, if they're a female character, they don't actually matter. They secretly are dead. They're secretly impotent.
Okay!
Well, because... The legate worships the Eater of Souls as a god. That makes him more powerful because it fills him with dark god magic. And
this is the clumsiest changing of hands for the villain hat yet.
That somber has ever done. Like he's done a better job with this before, and he wasn't even very good at it when he did it.
Yeah, no. The handoff to Sanguine was pretty clumsy. The handoff to Dawn was done by somebody else. The handoff to Cognitum was better than this. This just
really hollows the story out before there's
it's like, to the point where I wouldn't even blink if like Boo was the biggest bad,
the real villain,
from the beginning.
Blackjack is somehow the main antagonist of the story.
21 primary antagonists of the story.
He's the eater of souls and has been the whole time.
Wouldn't be thrown. I would not.
Not even be shocked. Yeah, no, it's I don't know. I think this is supposed to be the reason why there's so much dumb zebra mythology in the story, is that like the main antagonist is like darkest Africa man. Like he's just God, like, oh man, he's so much just racist bullshit just to exist as a character.
What happens
Fuck,
next?
I guess we. What happens next? Okay, so there's a scene I get to skip most of it. There's a really incredibly contrived scene where basically all of BJ's which former antagonists, because you know Sanguine's still around. Horse, I guess, is kind of an antagonist in the story.
Oh, I forgot Charmed about all that. Sanguine is still here.
They all team up to save Blackjack and put her back together. And there is a ridiculously long scene.
I hate this.
And Dawn like dies trying to bring her back and stupid shit. Like it's this exhausting thing the story really loves to compound to, where it's like, only now in my death throes did I realize that Blackjack was right the whole time. I'm sorry. I repent for every evil thing I've ever done. You really were the best of us, Blackjack. But they put her back together again, and it's really dumb and boring. And stupid. But yay, now we get to start what I refer to lovingly as the Clone Jack Saga, where BJ is in a clone body for like most of this book. So all those dumb, stupid mechanical upgrades, the whole like theming of metaphor of losing yourself slowly as you're becoming a more and more of a machine in an effort to try and kill the waste, you know, becoming the abyss to kill the abyss, all that's out the fucking window. It never mattered. That was never the theme. It was always building a better antagonist. So that's cool.
Great.
BJ gets over all of her stuff to get back together. Charm talks about how cool and rad she is because we need a character in the scene to do that.
God damn it.
so here's an extra fun bit. So because now she's no longer cybernetic, it's as if training weights have been taken off of her magic, because her magic has been strongly diminished by being cybernetic for so long because of Essen's loss, which is a Shadowrun thing, that all of her magic is super strong now.
Soldier X, whoop, whoop. I'm just seeing you, man. So, I just like brain can't.
So like Steel Rain goes to do something bad, and she just teleports behind him effortlessly. And he basically just cannot do anything to her. So they fight a bit, and it's stupid. Charm gets taken hostage by Steel Rain, and she still has all like the dumb brain stuff in her head, and she's like talking about how rad and awesome Blackjack is, and how literally uses the phrase where it's Steel Rain, like she says to Steel Rain, like a better person than you is about to kill you, and it's just really just jerk off motion the whole time. It's like
I am choosing to retain some degree of my sanity by like imagining her like drooling and her eyes like slightly akimbo as she just sort of like. She tonelessly recites these things.
Well, she was full of Blackjack's memory, so because Blackjack thinks she's good, now this person has been like brain-jacked.
She doesn't though. Like all.
Well, she thinks she's morally correct.
All right. Yeah, that is true. Like she does.
she is a cop still. Don't get me wrong.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, she gets is their brain completely cooked by...
Yes. Anyways, I've got more important things to talk about. Horse's dying words are something cryptic, and Blackjack, like, goes like, good thing I have memory magic, and just kind of, like, packs his brain up into a memory orb, like, so that's cool. And he hands her, like, Steel Rain is defeated in the dumbest way. Let's get there. So Steel Rain is, like, BJ, like, teleports behind him and, like, uses her telekinetic magic to just, like, pull the firing pins out of his flat cannons, rendering them useless. But he's still in power armor, so he's dangerous. The power armor is made out of star metal, and luckily, Horse this entire time had a pendant of moonstone, so she just like hits him with it a bunch of times using her telekinesis, which admittedly could be a kind of cool scene of just like this little bullet basically made of like anathema, like made of anti-star metal magic, is just zipping really fast or like through him a bunch of times to tear all the armor off, because it like, you know, expands into useless junk and breaks off every time she hits him, which is kind of cool. It rapidly expands and like shatters off of him kind of, and he's like laid bare, weakened, and he begs her not to kill him.
Okay, so Sombra, wait. No, you finish, and I'll... All right, so Laid Bear, he's naked.
He's begging to live, and BJ's like, oh yeah, you're gonna live. You're gonna go work in the society farms for the rest of your life, which is, like, really, really cool as an idea. And this gets really weirdly, like, meta. It's super weird where, like, Steel Rain basically just calls out the fact that the story always lets everybody go the moment they want to live. And he just makes up a bunch of dumb backstory that's just obviously lies, but he's trying to, like, get her to, try to appeal to her. And of course it fucking works, but it's very weird to have, like, a character lampshade one of the worst parts of this story, and, like, it still happens, you know, because that's how lampshades work. But of course, at the last second, he tries to kill her anyways, because the story needs justifiable homicide. So she murders him by, I think, kicking him off an elevator or something. I don't know. It doesn't matter. Action movie detritus.
Heart bomb never pays off. It's usually something I would save for a note for the end of the episode, but I want to address it now. The star metal has now officially been three different things. Like, it fundamentally worked in three wildly different ways. First, it was an eerie, cryptic, like, unearthly, like, alien metal that responded to energy input by emitting pure death. by emitting...
If you pumped electricity into it, if you put electricity into it, it would irradiate innervation. But if you expose it to different frequencies of magic, it would restructure it, because it was nanotechnology. And it also, if you interact with moonstone, it explodes. That's what it is.
That's what I was gonna, like, yeah. But so no, first it was just that. That's all it was. And technology around it seemed to, like, be based on that. Like, that it was like, you could theoretically use it as a way to enhance the power generating thing of it, but otherwise it was a security system. It just spread death, and then it became nanites, and so you could form it into any shape. I don't know why the default is rings. And it turns out that it explodes when in contact with moonstone. But now it expands and generates more of itself when in contact with moonstone. I hate this.
Here's a double whammy. The reason why it turns into a ring is because that's what the Eater of Souls looks like. The Eater of Souls is, like, based off of a real world reactor, which is basically just a giant. This entire series, the main antagonist of the entire thing, is a giant donut.
Gotta stop a bad donut. Okay.
Yeah, the evil donut. And the second thing is that something I didn't remember about the original story is the original story has star metal in it. But star metal is just, like, poisonous. Like, it's just basically just a radioactive type of metal. It's just uranium, basically. Like, it just, people don't interact with it because it's you can't really make anything out of it. And if you shoot it into somebody, they'll die because it's radioactive. And that was all that was ever about it in the original story. But, like, because Somber can't come up with anything new. He has no original ideas. Every single fucking thing he ever does is stolen either from the original story and, like, reworked to be something more complicated, or it's ripped off of some other fucking thing. Usually both. So that's why that's why there's an enduring legacy of Star Metal in this setting, is because it's, like, a thing from the original story that, like, as per usual, like, anytime there's ever a gap, or anytime there is not total and utter contextual information on a piece of material or character, Somber will take that character and fill that void, because it's the general nerd reaction to things. It's why there's a million Star Wars novels. It's why there's a fucking Wikipedia. Is because, like, seemingly the, like, nerd reaction to media having anything that could possibly be implicated or thematic, it has to have a contextual reason for why it works that
way. Decoding the metaphor. Okay, so all that said, let's move on.
Yeah, we're like halfway through this chapter. We gotta get to bat orgies next. There's a dumb fucking god. So none of that matters. Everyone that helped her is dead now. Yay. BJ's completely on her own for once in the first time in the fucking story, because she doesn't even have the dealer with her. BJ reads through some notes, because they're in the OIA office now, or they're in the Robonco office, whatever, it doesn't matter. And we find this incredibly stupid thing that has never been brought up before, that, like, Golden Blood was, like, really into Luna, maybe romantically, or, like, at least he's attracted to her. Kind of maybe worshipped her as, like, in her evil nightmare moon form. So, like, that's a whole thing. Well, it's because these next couple of chapters are really...
What next?
Yeah, we got a whole bunch of shit to get through. But yeah, and on top of that, finds, like, a fucking portal into another place, I guess, which is cool. And BJ ends up in a weird, like, spooky castle, basically. And just as she's starting to get her footing on what the fuck's happening, fucking Psycho Shy shows back up into the story. She's like, "Hi, Blackjack, where have you been? How are you here? You're not supposed to be able to get in here." And I think she finds, like, Psycho Shy in, like, an orgy of bat ponies, I guess, that are all fucking. So that's cool. And they have a casual conversation of what the fuck's even going on.
I feel like there's things I should be saying, but, like...
I would like to point out that apparently, a word of Somber doesn't like filler at all, because he believes he's never wrote any filler into his own story either, apparently. But here we are in a bat pony orgy where... So I'm gonna run through this real quick, but so it turns out that apparently where the bat ponies have been living this whole time is inside of a castle that was built for Nightmare Moon that has been shunted into the Shadow Realm, and that's how it survived for so long. But the bat pony population that lives there has been slowly dying out because inbreeding, basically. So Psycho Shy's plan to reverse this is apparently they've been taking / kidnapping people from the wasteland to be used as breeding stock, which a lot of this is unremarked by the main character of the story, who lived in a stable that literally did this, but, you know, whatever. We don't have time to address this at all.
Mm-hmm.
She mentions, oh, it kind of feels like Stable 99, but it's not like, she doesn't do anything about it, because she's a fucking cop, but who gives a shit? But so anyways, she's here now, and, like, the leader of them is a guy named King Hades, and he's just a jerk, and his queen is Queen Persephone, because of course it is, and she's all motherly, and the whole plan is, like, no one can leave here, so even though they're free to do whatever they want in the Nightmare Castle, they're not allowed to leave at all, so it's basically just sex slavery, but sure. And BJ just explains slash yells at Hades that, like, a fucking apocalypse is coming, you need to do something, and he's like, nah, that's not going to affect us because we're in the Shadow Realm, baby. He doesn't talk like this, but I don't give a shit about trying to, like,
hey, man,
preserve the author
chill.
Voice.
Shadow Realm is safe from that. Hey, for all that, man, like, now you should be all the more grateful that we're taking on some of them Light Realm ponies into the safety of our groovy digs, man.
I do kind of like this interpretation of Bat Pony hippies. That's pretty good. Also, the fact that apparently they've been herding people into this this thing using the guards. So a thing that was established fucking forever ago is you need a Bat Ponies need a special like necklace thing that allows them to speak in at human or at pony frequencies, because otherwise they just sound like bats. So it's very comical to think about a bunch of these guards. They're just like squeaking at frequencies. Other people can't understand it. They're just being bewilderedly hoarded into like a castle and then been like
these fucking knights, yeah. These terrifying knights with bat like black fur and bat wings in gothic armor swooping out of the sky, menacing over you, and they say
And apparently expect you to understand what they're talking about.
You're poked with pitchforks as you're pushed into a swirling black portal.
But, oh, Christ. We're almost done this chapter already, but fucking... We got a couple more doozies. So BJ gets so fresh...
There's a few things in the wrap-up that we gotta go over, so yeah, let's...
Yeah,
let's,
yeah, yeah. Anyways. Blackjack gets so frustrated, she, like... Fine, I'll just leave my own way, and then she just bamf teleports out of here. But because they're still in the Shadow Realm, the world outside of the Nightmare House is like an inky blackness. BJ finds her body and her friends, and she can't hear what they're saying because it's all like weird other plane stuff when they're talking. But they all look clearly upset with their new robot overlord. But BJ gets like mad at her own body, and then like. The soul of Nightmare Moon slash Luna just is there, and she's talking to her now, so I guess that's cool. And this scene is so brain dead and stupid. Oh, fuck Christ. So, she talks with her and is like, so are you Nightmare Moon or Luna? And she's like, maybe I'm both, who knows? I did a lot of evil shit, and maybe I can never fix that. And she's like, you know, you're in somebody else's body. And she's like, I don't know, it looks like me, it has all my memories. So, well, maybe it is me. I don't know. Who cares? Like, she doesn't talk like this, obviously, but it's about this flippant with it. And then we get to see a whole bunch of memories, because we gotta, like, bamf into a memory orb at some point in every chapter, where we see, like, kind of the way a lot of things unfolded. There's a really dumb plot hole that, like, Luna knows about the Gardens of Equestria, but sure. Goldenblood already knew about them anyways. And we get a lot of conversations between her and Goldenblood, where it's, like... Again, weirdly romantic, because of course it is, because Goldenblood is the main OC of this fucking story. Christ. So there's a ridiculous, there's a lot of ridiculous conversations about them and them talking about like the plans for the future and basically like preempting all of the things that already happened in the story, and it's really stupid. And there's this one ridiculous scene that I really had to highlight between the two of them where, so there's that part where Fluttershy breaks her heart, like he breaks her heart and she has a miscarriage over it. And what apparently what that was is that like Luna was inside of Goldenblood's dreams at the time, because that's a thing that she can do. And in his dreams, he was like happy and not hurt. And I guess I don't understand the scene very well. I don't remember it very well, but like maybe they were fucking in his dreams, so he like said her name aloud. And that's why Fluttershy had that miscarriage. Just soul escaping your body.
Okay. Hit me with the next note. Hey, what then?
So he's she's like, all right, I need to find Golden Blood, and Luna's like, well, Golden Blood's dead.
Why? Okay. She does.
Because it's the
she
only. Well, she does because it's the only other like plot point they have. It's the only other thing they fucking have is they need to figure out because they're like, okay, Golden Blood has to be alive. He has to have lived through this. He's too smart. Sure, whatever. And she's like, oh, he's in the Redoubt, which is the Nightmare House. So apparently he's somewhere inside the Nightmare House. So BJ has to go back and confront Golden Blood. Because of course there was no fucking way we were getting into this fucking story without Blackjack meeting fucking Golden Blood in person. That was just never going to happen. Yeah, it was never not in the cards.
I don't know why. I do not.
Because he has information.
No, hold on. Let me finish the statement. I do not know why I allowed myself to think that Sommer had the character, the self-control.
The restraint.
Let Golden Blood have died 200 years ago. I don't know why I thought that. It's because every single neuron in my brain, every single storytelling instinct says, by God, if you have a character in the past who is this important and who keeps showing up in memories and all that shit, you get enough of him, and it is important that his character is the scar he left on the world. You should never meet that guy! You should never... He should be gone! He should be a character that exists only in legacy. But this is Somber, so that was a poor choice of assumptions.
Yeah, and that's our next chapter. Just to give a little thing. Next chapter is literally called Chapter 67, Golden Blood. So it's all about that fucker. All right, that definitely peaked the mic.
Now I'm looking at it. It's a tight little bundle of sound. It doesn't even break the edges. It's...
I don't think we have time so much for recommendations because of something weird has plans. So we should just jump right into that.
Plans? Did I say I have ding ding plans? Jingles. What have you got for us today, Jingles?
God, I really need to draw Jingles at some point.
Jingles sends us some fan mail. Huzzah! Fan mail cubed. And I say cubed because it's a carrot and a three, indicating to the power of three. So somebody has sent us fan mail in the form of a cube. And it's not signed, but it is, once again, it's not signed or prefaced in the actual text of the email, but it's from Valentinian. For the sake of not causing any confusion, I'm going to resist the urge to editorialize at all. While reading Valentinian's words to you, dear listener. Greetings yet again, Admiral Admin, and Sir Weirdington Esquire, and the one known as Phi. I write to you again on the morrow of your next broadcast with the moon high above. I'm still enjoying the show as usual, but today come to you with suggestions for my fellow listeners. And an interesting update to a certain tabletop game previously ravaged on your program. For classic literature of a higher mindset than Fiora Sombrero's Gutter Brain, the works of Jules Verne and H.G. Wells are near timeless and heavily impactful to the past century of science fiction. For more modern works, I recommend the ongoing Dresden Files, incorporating old fantasy into new modern Chicago Everyman, Wizard's Perspectives, as well as Altered Carbon, about a resurrected super soldier in an aristocratically run stagnant galaxy, where the Netflix show came from. As to Deadlands, well, according to a friend of mine who runs games of it according to a friend of mine who runs games of it, that axes out the racist elements, Native Americans causing Armageddon, CSA, etc. They're apparently retconning some elements now, starting with the Confederacy collapsing in 1871 and being reabsorbed into the Union. I bring this up because Project Horizons being based on it wasn't aging well as it was written, and now the board game itself is being cleansed of the filth. The point is, PH seemingly doomed to just get worse and worse as time goes on. Also, to the last episode, or the one before that, that thing with scotch tape, that is why you shouldn't touch speak. It doesn't know how to properly express, I didn't know how to properly express this before, but now I can with the disturbing revelation enabling context for you, so please, everyone, never read that. Forgive me for being more direct and dour than before. I've just had that mental image stewing in my head since Phi described it aloud. With that, I shall close. Parentheses, all well, I. P.S. I looked at the chapters list, and you have about a dozen more to go. Good luck and Godspeed, brave jukebox and lewd artist.
I think Weird can definitely touch a lot more on like the Dresden Files and Deadlands, and I can definitely
I'm bursting out of the seams to do so.
And I just wanted to say that I guess we should also like kind of talk about like I only know through a friend like the like character of Fall of Equestria Project Horizons Speak as it's known as, or just Speak because it's a mouthful. And like why you shouldn't read it, and give kind of like an anti-recommendation based off that knowledge. But Weird, I think you look like you have something to say. Well, do you?
Well, I think I could swear if we haven't talked about Speak on the podcast, we've it's come up in phone conversations outside of it. Just pedophile levels to maximum. It's very
also Somber works on it, so you know.
Yeah. So in reverse order. Deadlands! Bang! I've heard about that. I've heard about some of the retcons are weird. They're not even, like, revising things. They're just progressing their, like, internal timeline of the story's events forward. And, retconning in the old-school comic book sense of recontextualizing existing information.
Which is very groggy, in my opinion.
Yeah, they're just saying that the CSA finally collapses. At a certain point of the timeline. The thing about that is that, and I misread it the first time because I misread it as, and also they're retconning it, the Native Americans never caused Armageddon. Them causing the CSA to collapse and just removing the CSA as a feature really is an ill omen to me. It speaks to me of a failure to recognize the actual problem. It's a very sweeping under the rug, a fine, we just won't talk about it anymore. When the actual problem is the lionizing of the Confederacy.
The apologia is the issue.
Classic apologia, like the number one red flag for like turning like a skeptical eye at everybody involved in the writing of Deadlands. Was when they, that period where they had it, that the CSA, the Confederate States of America, abolished slavery on its own.
It's like the abolishing slavery thing isn't just like necessarily just apology. It's also just a failure to understand like the reason why kept slaves.
It is apology to the point that it is literally a regurgitation of basically Confederacy denial.
To go into like why that always comes up as a thing is like, well, they would have kept they would have abolished slavery eventually. It's like, no, they like the reason why the Confederacy cared as much as they did wasn't because of like states' rights or their own honor or any of that bullshit. It's just pure capitalism. Like most of the Confederate states survived on the backs of like agrarian living, and the Union survived on industrialization.
It was in their constitution.
Removing slavery meant they lost a lot of money because it meant that they couldn't pick cotton as efficiently.
But I mean, again, that, not even like the money, like there's a lot of evidence you can find all over the place, all throughout contemporary writings from the period, that the powers that be in the Confederacy were religiously devoted to the existence of slavery. Like it was.
Yeah. And like a friend brought up a good point too, is that like the existence of a cotton gin didn't fucking stop slavery. So like, I'm kind of wrong. Like it still is a capitalistic concern, but yeah, it's also like a fervent religious hatred of dark skinned people that like, even when newer technology came out that would just more or less solve their problems when it comes to like the slavery deficit, I guess, like they didn't care because it didn't matter to them as much as it mattered, like owning people.
So like I ran it when I read a Deadlands campaign that took place in Texas, I did some reading about the Confederacy and how they saw themselves and their moral arguments for their own case. And it was so horrifying that I am fully convinced that erasing the CSA from the setting is the weakest, most cowardly thing they could possibly do, because they're amazing villains. The thing to remember about Deadlands, first and foremost, before or after anything else, all Deadlands is the Bruce Campbell movie Army of Darkness, the third movie in the Evil Dead series, but set in the Wild West. Like, yeah, it's Western. That's all it is.
It's Weird West pulp, but instead of fighting, you know, generic First Nations people, it's fighting skeletons. That's the difference.
And so, like, yeah,
it's like erasing the Nazis
from a World War, like a weird World War II setting, because
and kind of not getting like, and not really getting like why people are mad at you for like having the Nazis and endorsing the Nazis as much as you do. It's like, oh, clearly you just don't like Nazis, so we'll just get rid of that. But like, we'll keep all the eugenics and all the fascism. Just it'll just be somewhere else.
Anyway, so all of that said about Deadlands, let's move on to the Dresden Files. Yes. You know, Valentinian, we can still be friends. I have a lot of friends with your peculiar brain condition. Sorry to insult you that way, but
that's a little much, I think.
It's just that here, the degree to which I hate the Dresden Files, my passionate loathing of the Dresden Files is so intense that it created this podcast that you're listening to. The genesis of this podcast is me hanging out on a live stream with Fi. And the subject of the Dresden Files came up, and I yelled for 45 minutes. And everyone on the call said, "Hey, Weirdington, you should, man, if you recorded that would be some serious entertainment hours. That'd be a heck of a podcast." And Fi mentioned that he had been thinking about doing a podcast for a while, but not knowing what to do it about. And I immediately, and then I had the vision, and then I saw the stretch of infinity out before us, and knew that this podcast, the fanfic, was a set moment in time that we were going to record.
Yeah, I've talked to this before, but I'm just like this. Like, before we started doing this podcast, at a moment's notice, the moment it was vaguely related, or I just needed, like, there was just some dead air on the stream, and I just needed to talk about something, I would launch into a long, long-form rant about Project Horizons, which always, like, missed things. Like, that was kind of the reason why, like, I wanted to do a podcast on it, was that, like, it's impossible to talk about any one particular piece and how bad it is without contrasting with all of the other stuff. Like, Dawn wouldn't be nearly as striking as a character if we didn't talk about how she had one moment of interesting glory. Or we wouldn't be able to talk about all like the staggering amount of rape and sexual assault and pedophilia that the story is plagued with, because it's spread out through so much of the story that's kind of like hard to keep it all in your brain all at once. So it needs like a podcast filter to kind of like, you know, get all the
systematic deconstruction. But yeah, no, as said in the very first episode, this is an exorcism for Fi. We are helping free Fi from the obligation to talk about this ever again.
Because yes, I can just point at the podcast and be like, listen to this.
And as an apology for being a little bit too intense and disparaging your literary tastes, Sir Valentinian, I have resolved to make a full episode about Dresden. The shoe's going to be on the other foot. I'm going to go back and read the first book of the Dresden Files series again, to my great pain and agitation, and report my findings back to Phi. It's been almost a decade since the last time I read that book, and It angered me on a deep spiritual level before I ever became super radicalized as a socialist. And like in hindsight, I've gotten angrier at it. And so I'm gonna read Stormfront, the first book in the Dresden series files, and you're all gonna hear about it.
Yeah, we were sort of shooting the shit about the idea of what we're gonna do, like maybe as a kind of like intermin before we get started on FOE and stuff, and maybe just doing a couple episodes of just like sort of potpourri, detritus, things we are mad about. Because I definitely, God, I can't remember the name of the book, but it's a fantasy novel series that has like maybe one of the most sexist depictions of women I've ever seen in a fantasy novel, which is impressive.
That is a pretty high bar. It's an extraordinary watermark. I'm not sure we have anything else except this diligent reader has managed to spawn an entire episode of the podcast. Dare you test your hand and see if you can do the same by giving us feedback, sending it to weirdingtonesq@gmail.com. Or you can
contact me
on Twitter. Contact Fi's extremely not safe for work porn factory.
Yes, porn also smithery. I draw Kamen Rider sometimes.
Lewd Horses, Kamen Rider, Beanbows. At Thou Art Fi, or my comparatively tamer Twitter that follows a lot of lewd accounts, but otherwise keeps it pretty wholesome in the actual posts. We're at Weirdington E on Twitter.com. All that said, Fi. Fi.
Yep.
There's 11 to 12 more of these we have to do. Fi.
Yep. We're almost there.
Fi. I don't wanna. This was all a terrible mistake.
10 million Yanks. If it takes them to tear the fascists down, down, down. If it takes them to tear the fascists down.